morning and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Marcia Fort. For over 16 years, Fort has been the executive director of the Greater Ithaca Activity Center, known as GIAC, located in downtown Ithaca. Fort is also a well-known, well-respected community activist and leader, and is a strong advocate for those unrepresented voices in our community. Welcome to the show, Marcia.
Thanks, Tish. Happy New Year.
Oh, thank
you. To you and your listeners.
Thank you. Now, as I said in my introduction, you've been a well-respected leader and activist in our community for so many years. Did you come from a background that encouraged leadership and community service?
I actually did. Both my parents were active in the community in volunteer activities. They were actively involved with the school system, both in terms of ensuring that the educational needs of their four children were being met, but then also, particularly my father, overall looking at issues that were impacting children of color, particularly black children, mm-hmm. And low-income children. And isn't it ironic, it is for me sometimes with the work that I do, to sometimes see how some of the issues still remain the same, and in some cases are even worse.
I imagine that's discouraging. Where were you brought up? Where was all
here,
that?
Here in Ithaca. I moved here in 1965 when I was seven. My father was getting his PhD at Cornell. We came from Montgomery, Alabama, and how interesting that was, having grown up in a segregated neighborhood, went to segregated school, coming here. Met my first white friends here, moved out to the country, and then when my father got his PhD, we stayed. I think Ithaca is a good place to raise children, particularly young children. I think it's a good place for families.
I agree with you about that. Yeah. Now, you've been the executive director of GIAC for over 16 years. Tell us about the early mission for GIAC and how it's evolved.
GIAC was created in 1972, and this was at a time when Ithaca was very fortunate to have a number of neighborhood houses here. There was a house on West Hill. There was the Northside Center downtown. The YMCA used to be located downtown. And then, of course, the Southside Community Center. The West Side House closed. The North Side House was sold. The YMCA had a fire, burned, and then relocated to their existing location. And so there were people, some agencies that included the Ithaca City School District, United Way, the Social Service League, and the City of Ithaca, and some concerned individuals who got together and were concerned about the needs of young people in the community. So it was through their vision and their hard work that they decided that they would create a center that would provide service for what they called the Greater Ithaca area. And the mission statement was to provide educational, cultural, and recreational programs for people of all ages, particularly youth, that would focus on their individual and social development. So the mission remained the same from 1972 until 2001, I believe it was, when it was actually upon the advice of then Mayor Alan Cohen. We were talking one time, and he'd been talking about the mission, and one of the things that he pointed out is that there was nothing in our mission statement that talked about the kind of advocacy work that we do. Mm. And what he talked about is, you have been fortunate, I would agree with this, to have a city administration that has been overall supportive of GIAC and the work that we do. But what if down the road somewhere that changed? What would you have to show that says you do the work, this is the reason that you do the work that you do? And so after discussion with the board of directors, they agreed to, and actually thought it was a good idea, to change the mission statement, to add on those pieces. So the mission statement was revised. It keeps the core elements of the mission statement that had been created when GIAC was first created, but it added things like that we fight against oppression and intimidation in our community, that we provide structured employment programs for at-risk youth and adults, that we advocate for underrepresented and disenfranchised populations, mm-hmm. the things that speak to the kind of work that we actually do on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. And you're often asked to speak at different organizations and schools and stuff about leadership and oppression and racism and stuff. Tell us what your thoughts are on leadership. What makes a good leader? Because you are considered one of the best in our community. What is that?
Well, thank you very much. It's always very interesting sometimes how people, people often will define you more in ways you may not necessarily define yourself. But I would, again, have to go back to my upbringing. And I have a brother and I have two sisters. And the four of us are active and have been active in the communities in which we live. And I do think it has to do with having parents who were very active in the community. Also, my father was a professor at Cornell and did a lot of work with graduate students and international graduate students. Mm-hmm. So we were really blessed at a young age to grow up surrounded by a very diverse group of people, people for whom English was not their first language, people that had only been in the United States for a long time, people from countries throughout the world. And so that helped frame for us our experiences and our knowledge and our understanding about the importance of diversity. And it was just an accepted part of what happened in our household. We often, will joke and say when you look back over holidays and things, that it's rare the time when it was just our immediate family. There was always someone else there. And to tell you the truth, that still happens. Mm-hmm. But I do consider that a blessing. So having had role models that helped us, we were taught that you speak up for what you feel. If you feel that an injustice has been done, that you need to speak up about that, and then to think about what are the ways that you can be heard. And I'll often, talk with younger people. I used to tell this to my daughters as growing up. It's not always what you say, it's how you say it. Mm. And my parents were both from the South and believed in and raised us to be very respectful to adults and be respectful to people in general. It's not that you're always going to agree with everybody, but it's the ability to acknowledge that somebody else may have a different opinion than yours, and that to respect that opinion, even though you don't necessarily agree with what that is. Mm-hmm. And I think we live in a community here in Ithaca where issues of oppression, issues of diversity and inclusion are issues that get brought up a lot and get talked about. Although I will certainly say that I believe that there is a lot more work that needs to be done in our community as a whole than sometimes we like to believe that there is. And I do think that sometimes hampers us from making the kind of progress around oppression, around issues of race, around issues of class. It hinders us from making the kind of progress that I believe that we could make, because I think that we think, oh, here we live in this very progressive, highly intelligent community. Mm-hmm. And so we don't really need to talk about those issues when, in fact, yes, we absolutely
do. And there have been enough incidences in recent times.
That's right. There's been enough incidents. People think that this is, which it is, and I'm, I'm proud of that. When you think about people who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgendered, this is a more welcoming place, community, than maybe some other communities across the country. Mm-hmm. That does not mean that there is still not homophobia that exists. And bias toward the LGBT community.
So you think people in some ways in a town like this become a little bit too comfortable?
I do. Mm-hmm. I do think that. And I think there's a tendency to say, you're making too much of this, or, why do you always have to be talking about these kind of issues? And it's very interesting because when you think about the civil rights movement, when you think about the women's movement, how do people think that those got started? It's by people talking, by people continuing to bring to the forefront what the issues are. And it's actually interesting. I believe that when you are part of a community, that means celebrating the very good things that are in this community, but it also means recognizing, talking about and working to change the things in our community that need to be changed. So I think there are sometimes, I mean, I actually have heard people, you know, question, well, if you think Ithaca has all these problems, why are you still here?
Oh,
this is my community, and I love this community. And because I love the community, it's important that we acknowledge that there are issues here, that we have a great degree of people who have a lot of wealth here. We also have a great degree of people who are living in poverty, living and working in poverty. Mm-hmm. We have a problem with homelessness in our community. And no, you may not think because it's not what you may see in a larger city, but that doesn't mean that there are not people and families who are homeless in our community.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the educational system at the elementary and secondary level, what is happening? That's not something, I mean, that's something people can do the research on themselves. They can look at the statistics. And unless you believe that African Americans and Latinos and Southeast Asians are inferior to white people, then you have to look at the scores, the test results, and see there is something wrong. When you look at the dropout rates, you have to know there is something wrong with the system. And it is in the best interest of our entire community. I think sometimes people don't believe that what is good for rural white children, what is good for Southeast Asian children, what is good for black children, will ultimately be good for the entire community when all of our populations who live here, the various populations, are able to have jobs where they're able to support themselves and their families, when children are able to get the kind of education they want, they need, and they deserve. It benefits the entire community.
Yes, it does. Yeah. I had Ira Revels on from the Village at Ithaca. And
yes.
We talked about these issues extensively. Isn't it amazing in the 21st century, several years into it, we still have to worry about inclusion and diversity? It's just amazing.
Well, in fact, I think that that we've taken a number of strides backwards. I think things have been moving back. When I think about the civil rights movement.
Give me some examples. What do you mean?
Well, I think about what's happening with the immigration laws, for one,
yes.
And the kind of horrendous things that are happening to individuals, to entire families, for people to be locked up and not be given adequate and sufficient legal representation.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people don't even know where their family members are, how long they're going to be, incarcerated.
Yeah.
When I think about the increasing unemployment rate, and here in New York State, you know, when you think about all of the taxes we have and the businesses that, you know, that are leaving and leaving people, you know, without jobs. When you think, when I think about racial profiling, all kinds of horrendous things.
The rise of xenophobia in this country is absolutely reaching scales none of us ever dreamed we could ever turn back toward.
Absolutely.
It's
really, I think we're living at a time where, I actually think we're living in very scary times. I think that there are people who are doing and saying things now that they may not have said before. Like there's this level of comfort with hatred and ugliness. And
I think it stems from some of the national leadership, to be frank.
I would absolutely agree. I would absolutely agree with that.
This has turned into quite a rough culture, and it's taking us backward fast.
Well, and what's happening to our children, and what message are we sending to our children?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Now, I know you're very proud to acknowledge that you raised two daughters as a single parent.
Yes.
So I want to bring this up, and I know it was controversial and continues to be, but back in the spring of 2004, Bill Cosby challenged black people to take a hard look at poor parenting, disproportionate fatherlessness, disrespect for education. What do you think as a local leader about his call to arms, or was he blaming the victim?
I actually thought that there was some value in what Bill was saying. And I'm sorry that, as often happens actually, that the controversy surrounding his overall remarks maybe didn't allow people to take the time to really dissect what it was that he was saying and take a good hard look. And what I see, and in fact some of the things, I would agree with some of the things that he said, and I see this as it plays out not only in black families with black children, but I see it happening in white families as well. When I look at how the messages that we are sending our young people. We are living in a very materialistic world. When we think that it is more important to buy a $125 pair of the latest sneakers that came out, but we don't save that money to make sure that we have adequate food in our cupboards or to pay for the tutor that may be needed, something is wrong here. When you look at the number of children who have had children, when you look at the lack of extended family relationships, when, you know, when people coming up in neighborhoods. And so, you know, you hear people talk about if you did something in the block, you were going to get it by your neighbor and get it when you got home. Mm-hmm. Are we looking out for our children, or do we see children walking by and turn our head because we don't want to get involved?
If you're just joining us, my guest is Marcia Fort. She's the executive director of the Greater Ithaca Activity Center, also known as GIAC. Well, let's continue this discussion because a lot of what Cosby brought up has to do with racism and the incredible incarceration of so many black men in our culture, which is obscenely high. Let's talk more about that.
It's about a sense of apathy, a sense of hopelessness. It is about material things. I mean, on some levels, how do you compete with somebody who can make thousands of dollars in a week selling drugs versus having to find a job where they're going to be being paid minimum wage?
Exactly.
I mean, as an employer, we see this often, the young people who are saying, I'm not working for minimum wage, or even $10 an hour, I'm not working for $10 an hour. And it's interesting, and particularly the way, you know, the way that I was raised in terms of watching both my parents, who were very hard workers, the expectation that we would work, you know, as we moved up, and that hard work is what you do to get ahead in, you know, in life. But at the same time, what do you do when you see people who are out there trying very hard to get jobs? They put in application after application after application, only to not get hired. Mm-hmm. At some point, then what? When you see people who are having to work two jobs, who can be home to cook dinner? Who can be home to supervise the homework? So I definitely think we are living at a time when there's more sort of disintegration of families, and whatever that may mean. And I'm not even necessarily talking about,
that's right, all of them.
And so, you know, when I look at Bill Cosby, despite his own personal problems, you know, that he had, but when I think about the personal problems, you see, he isn't an idol. He's a human being, and human beings makes mistakes. And I actually don't let the mistakes that he made in his personal life define actually all of who he is, because Bill Cosby was an important presence in my life as I was growing up, you know, as a black comedian that both black people, white people, everybody loved Bill Cosby. The positive images of the black family that his shows portrayed on major networks was something that was good for everybody. To see.
He was one of the first black characters on TV who made white people realize they don't have to be so afraid
of
black men.
That's right. Yeah. And so, yes, I believe there was some truth in what Bill Cosby had to say.
Yeah. Now, what do you think locally is the biggest concern for the black community at this point? And you're somebody who wants to bring all the communities together. What do we need to really continue to work on?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things that that I know a lot of people spend a lot of energy is talking about is the educational system in our community.
It's failing on quite a few levels.
We have a long way to go. There are a lot of issues. It was actually interesting to me, if you saw in the paper a couple of weeks ago, it was the first report card, the collaboration between the Ithaca City School District and the Village at Ithaca, which I think shows great promise in terms of, one, providing information that I'm not sure that a lot of people in the community understand what is happening. And I think that sometimes that's why conversations about when concerns are brought up may be, in some levels, divisive. Some people need to see numbers. They want to, you know, they want you to show them. Well, this report card will show them that. I also think it speaks hopefully will speak to the district's commitment to continue to work with community organizations. Schools are part of the community, and community, I mean, we're all one community. Mm-hmm. And so school districts and schools that have a hands-off, this is our territory, we know what we're doing, I find something problematic about that. Mm-hmm. Now, unless every child was getting straight A's and going off to college and, or wherever, you know, that might be one thing. Mm-hmm. But we clearly know in this community, it's not. So when I talk with people who work in other agencies, when I talk with caregivers, when I talk with young people, actually over the Christmas holidays, a young woman struggles very hard, actively involved in her community, but has to do a lot of work on her own. And she is a senior and it's time to be applying, you know, for college and her needing help with that. Where is she going to get the money as college applications increasingly have fees associated with them? Mm-hmm. And the SAT and the ACTs and all of that. Where?
Yeah.
We need more people who are helping to mentor and provide assistance to young people like this young woman that I'm thinking about, who there is no doubt in my mind, I know that that young lady needs to go to college. Mm. She is such a smart, like I see her as being a force for positive change in this country, in this world,
in the future, huh?
In the future, mm-hmm. already by the virtue of the things that she does. Mm-hmm. But I also see what a struggle it is for her. And she is somebody that's highly, you know, motivated, but it's a struggle for her because she doesn't have the kind of family supports that maybe other people are. We need programs in place in the community and in the schools to help young people like her. We need programs for young people to see who may not think that college or may not have the skills to go to college. They may not want to go to college. What are we doing? What kind of apprenticeship programs? Where are the employers in our community who are willing to take a young person on, thinking that not, oh, this is somebody I'll get, you know, sort of at, you know, at a lower rate for 2 or 3 years, but thinking about succession planning and thinking about the career needs of that young person, thinking about this community. Do we want this to be a community where all of our young people leave? Then what? Yeah. Don't we want to have a community where some of our young people are staying here, continuing to build upon the work that's already been done and is being done?
Yeah. Yeah, we could talk for hours about just some of these subjects. I want to move on to the legacy of Dr. King and the movement in this town. Geno Bush has spearheaded it with his group, Circle of Recovery, to try to name State Street for Martin Luther King. To tell us where you stand on that and what you think's happening.
Well, it's been very interesting, disheartening, and also exciting. What's been interesting is I was at the first large public meeting that they had in a room that was too small for all the people. We were like crowded in the hallway. But what I think is very exciting, that here's an initiative that grew out of the work that a community individual was doing with young people in our community. I sometimes think that people are missing the importance of that. When we talk, we say negative things often about young people. They're not doing this. They only care about this. They only care about themselves. They're only into music, that kind of thing. We are so fortunate to have so many wonderful young people that are doing great things in our community. So this grew out of conversations and discussions and by young people. And then what's been disheartening on some level is the kind of ugly things that people are saying. Some of them, in fact, probably most of them, not even aware of the impact of the kinds of things that they're saying. Well, why don't you just name the Southside Community, change the name of the Southside Community Center?
I know, I've heard
not knowing the history of the Southside Community Center. You just call it GIAC. You got the Alex Haley Pool over there so you could have everything kind of in one block.
Oh, God, isn't that unbelievable?
Not knowing, again, the history. The people who say that this has brought up issues of race and racism, then the people who say this has nothing to do with race and racism, the great divide, the struggle for the people on the Board of Public Works to figure out what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. So now we have another task force that's being created to look at this issue.
Wow.
It'll be interesting.
So this has brought more to the table than just the issue of Dr. King being honored.
It always does, and I would guess, in fact, I've seen some information that in every community just about where it has been proposed that there be a street named or a boulevard or ave named after Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., that it always brings up, because it never goes away. The issues of race and racism and oppression and classism, they don't go away. We just choose not to talk about them.
Yeah.
And then we act surprised and or angry when something comes up as if we thought it was all taken care of, dead and buried. And it's not. And when are we going to learn that the best way is to talk, to have forums, opportunities to talk about these issues, and to talk, but also to listen with an open mind. And again, trying to understand it from somebody else's perspective. You may not, but it helps, at least if you're willing to hear, to really listen to what people are saying. And when I think about this controversy that's been going on, again, I bring it back to, I wonder what the young people who are in Geno's Circle of Recovery class, I really wonder, what are they thinking about all of this? What message
is this sending?
Has this sending to them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're almost out of time, Marcia. To tell us a little bit. Speaking of Dr. Martin Luther King, what's happening for his birthday celebration coming up?
We are a community that does provide some activities, and that's a good thing, that are well attended. On Saturday, January 13th, is the Martin Luther King Breakfast. It is GIAC's largest community event. It was from 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. at the Beverly Martin Gym. It is open to everyone for a small fee, so we welcome everyone to attend. And please don't let money stop you. Come anyway. And then on Monday, January 15th, on the actual holiday, there is the MLK celebration, which this will be its 12th year. And I will say, usually it starts with a luncheon and then there are afternoon activities. We are changing the format, so we will start in the morning at 9:15 and then end with lunch beginning at noon. So the day will go from 9:15 to about 1:30, and the activity in the morning will actually be a poverty simulation, which will be facilitated by staff at Tompkins Community Action. So anyone wanting to participate in that, or even just to come and sit and view what the poverty simulation is, you're welcome to attend.
And can they get in touch with you? Phone number?
272-3622. Remember, it's a day on, not a day off.
Great. Marcia Fort, thank you so much for joining
us.
It's been a pleasure. Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. We are supported in part by Finger Lakes Arts Grants and Services. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.